song is called Cupid Bound. It's the opening track from Mississippi Heat's brand new album, Cab Driving Man. And Pierre Lecoq, first of all, thank you for joining us via Skype in Chicago. When we talked on the phone yesterday, you sounded especially geeked about this new album. But to be fair, you sounded especially geeked about the last album 2 years ago called Warning Shot. What's got you all pumped up about this album?
Well, you know, first of all, yes to everything you said. I'm still very proud of Warning Shot, you know, on the previous CD. But I think the continuation, you know, the band continues to stick together. So the gelling, the road, the trips, the traveling, the hundreds of gigs together and so forth definitely have solidified even further the sound, you know, the Mississippi Heat sound. Because the lineup is stable, as I said, for years now. So that's good. I also particularly enjoyed the range of the music on this one as well. I love the freshness of it. And I usually never listen to a recording, but this one I have. So I don't know, there's something there.
Really? You don't listen to your recordings all that much once you've got them done?
No, I do not. I just say enough. I did my best, and is what it is, and I'm moving on.
Ah, interesting. Well, let's talk about one of the songs called Cab Driving Man, which is titled to the album. Is there any significance to this song?
Yes, there definitely is. A couple of them, thanks for asking. One, it has to do with a cabaret. I had a cabaret feel for that song. I wanted to have a cabaret. And Cab Calloway, came to my mind, because I like, the Mooch, Michi the Mooch, or whatever the title of that song is. And I like a lot of what Cab Calloway does with big bands. And I wanted to have a cabaret feel. So the Cab Driving Man is, yes, about taxi. It's a story about a taxi driver. But it's also an ode, an homage to Cab Calloway.
Destination, he'll take you to your sister. Your wife or your secret sweetheart. Wherever you are going, trust me, he's got it down to an art.
You're kind of a stickler for blues bands knowing their blues, or at least being somewhat grounded in what the blues are about.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that.
I was going to ask you if you can flesh that out a little bit. Does that mean you're a strict traditionalist? Does that mean you're somewhat of a traditionalist? Does that mean the music itself has to have a certain structure? What does that mean?
Yes, the structure of a song, the feel of the song, has to start with culture, the blues culture. It has to have a blues historical musical context. So I do not like to venture, even though everybody will tell you, including me, that I'm fresh and original and all of that. My point of departure is always an homage and respect for tradition. My joy actually is tradition. However, I enjoy self-expression, within that context. So the language that I use, the images, and certainly the language, the musical repertoire that I use, definitely as a starting point, always comes from the harmonica players, that I respect and mentor me, really. Little Walter and Big Walter are the two ones for me. I do not like to create in a vacuum, no. And my musicians, I do not like a phony blues kind of a thing. If somebody in my band in the past couldn't do it, I would hire Billy Flynn, for example, to come, or John Primer, or Larry Bell, to take care of that aspect.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with the founder and leader of the band Mississippi Heat out of Chicago. I want to talk about another song on the album, Rosalie, which is interesting because you've got traditional blues going, but you add some flavors in here. You add some Latin flavors into your blues sound. I take it you're maybe a fan of Carlos Santana or somebody?
Hey, well said, well said. Well, Carlos Santana has always had an impact on me. I love his tone, I love his melodic playing, and I love the fact that he had a solid blues background himself. You know, he often mentioned Otis Rush, for example, and I know he had a blues period where he studied, he just woodshed and learned the blues licks, you know. So, but I like his approach because less is more, which is my style, I think, on the harmonica. You know, make a statement, stay the core, at the core of the song, you know, stay soulful. There's a melodic dimension to his playing that really speak to me.
About one harmonica player that I know is near and dear to you. His name is Junior Wells.
Ooh.
And you, if I have this right, you had a relationship with Junior that he sort of took you under his wing when you were starting to play some blues and harmonica in Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the first, I was not good on the harmonica. I had played for about 6 to 9 months when I dared visit him at Teresa's, you know, where he was playing. Right away, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but the chemistry was there, and he invited me, thanks to my brother Michel, because I was too shy. But Michel had asked, do you mind if he comes? He would be so honored. So Junior said, yes. So at Teresa's, quite a few times over the years, you know, I would go on stage with him at two harmonicas. But I always felt his blessing. It's a word. His blessing and his support. I think we connected well on the emotional, non-verbal level. It was not really it was a non-verbal thing. I don't know. Over the years, he often said, I know George Bass, you know, his guitar player for many, many years, he would tell George, Pierre, listen to the way he plays. That's the way it should be played, kind of statements, you know. So George would tell me that because George was part of Mississippi Heat, you know, towards the end of his life.
Well, it was over 20 years ago now. I got to see Junior Wells at a bar in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it was the first real blues show that I ever saw. What I got out of that, and from people I talked to later, is that Junior was such a sensitive soul.
Yes. And he was a good man and very giving, very generous, that's the word, with friends and people in need. There's a lot of stories that have never been told, you know, that, you know, certainly with his family members and stuff. So he had a very generous soul. It's a man that was very difficult not to like, even though you read stories that are just amazing, where he would be a rebel, be in prison and get into fights, go in front of the judge, and, you know, because he may have stolen a harmonica or something when he was very young. And I'm told, I've never seen that myself, but I'm told he could have a temper. But I he was an absolutely delightful man. I mean, this is the kind of, I mean, we would be playing at... forgot where he was now, you know, it's not Teresa's, it's another one that was comparable to Teresa's in Chicago that folded now.
The Checkerboard?
Checkerboard, that's the one.
Okay.
We were playing there. And he comes on stage because I was playing there. He comes on stage and starts playing with me. You know, there's things like that. And a picture that I have released, actually, in one of my interviews, where he gives me a kiss on the cheek, you know. So there's something. There was something between us that will stay forever with me.
Yes, when the blues found me, it finally broke down my lonely wall.
All right, Pierre Lecote, before I let you go, Cab Driving Man, the new album on Del Mar Records. What are you most proud of about this album?
Well, I would say definitely original, fresh in terms of interpretations and, you know, and harmonica and guitars and all that. I'm proud of Michael Dodson's songs that are quite original. Inetta did superb. The acoustic, I did more acoustic work on this album than ever. And I'm pleasantly surprised, and I will continue probably doing that in future recordings, the acoustic harmonica approach. So, and the production, the sound, the mixing. So again, it's a continuation of Warning Shot, but no less exciting.